on this question, whether parents ought to have a greater say in their child's education, it's time legislators let Alaskans decide.
Governor Parnell highlights education in his State of the State speech. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, January 23rd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Anchorage considers what to do with a rundown motel that houses poor residents.
There's no heat or hot water. I've been still having to pay $800 a month.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
For most of Sean Parnell's administration, oil taxes have gotten top billing in the Capitol, but with that legislative fight behind him, the Republican governor is changing his focus.
2014 will be the education session.
During his State of the State address last night, Parnell endorsed a constitutional amendment that would make school vouchers legal in the state. He also made a commitment to increase school funding if a reform package that's friendly to the school choice movement passes. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
The deal Parnell presented to state lawmakers is basically this. You give parents more options beyond traditional public schools, and I'll give those public schools more money for the next 3 years. Parnell didn't specify how much funding, but he did say it would come through the base student allocation. That's the dollar amount a school gets for each child enrolled. That number has sat at around $5,700 for the past 4 years, and school districts have been clamoring for an increase in the face of budget shortfalls. The BSA increase will be part of an omnibus bill he plans to introduce on Friday. Now for the strings attached. Condition 1.
I propose all local, state, and federal funding, except some capped district administrative expenses, travel with a student to a charter school.
Parnell described this as expanding choice. He said too many students are on wait lists for the state's public charter schools because of restrictive state laws. Parnell also encouraged the legislature to pass a law giving parents the right to appeal if a school board denies their application to start a charter school. Number 2.
I propose repealing and replacing the obsolete high school graduation qualifying exam.
The governor explained the test became obsolete when the state implemented new education standards. In its place, Parnell would require students to take a nationally recognized college entrance exam or a job skills test within 2 years of graduating, specifically the SAT, the ACT, or Work Keys. The state would pay for the first test. Bills that would get rid of the high school exit exam have already been introduced in both chambers of the legislature, with Republicans and Democrats signing on as sponsors. Number 3.
We must continue to expand the number and type of regional residential schools.
Like Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka, this was one of the nods to the state's rural areas where charter schools and private schools are in short supply, and the only alternatives kids have to their local public school is homeschooling or boarding school. Parnell also called for continued support of the Alaska Digital Teaching Initiative, which lets students take classes at other schools through a video link. Parnell also had one other big ask for the legislature on top of passing his reform bill, and it might have been the most controversial request of all.
I urge the House and Senate to vigorously debate the provisions of SJR 9 and move it to the people for a vote. On this question, whether parents ought to have a greater say in their child's education, it's time legislators let Alaskans decide.
The resolution would amend the Alaska Constitution so that the state could fund private institutions, including religious ones. It doesn't set up a school voucher system, but it would allow lawmakers to establish one if they wanted. For it to pass, it needs support from 2/3 of the legislature and then a majority of voters. At a press conference on Thursday, Parnell reiterated his support for the resolution, but clarified that his support of a BSA increase was not conditional on it passing. In all, Parnell spent nearly half of his annual speech on education. It got more time than his recommendations on fiscal policy, the proposed gas line, and the state's pension liabilities combined. No mention was made of the state's budget shortfall, which is expected to approach $2 billion this year. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Democrats may have clapped during Governor Sean Parnell's State of the State address when he suggested increasing the base student allocation, but they weren't happy with his larger education package. House Minority Leader Chris Tuck argued that after 4 years of keeping the per-student funding amount flat, there shouldn't be conditions on an increase.
We've been shortchanging education and crippling it. And now once it's being crippled, no more funding until we see reform.
His Senate counterpart, Hollis French, said he was disappointed that the governor supported a constitutional amendment that would allow state funds to be used at private schools. And he expressed concern that it could lead to vouchers.
Diverting public money to private schools simply continues to deprive our public schools of the resources they need to do their job.
French suggested Parnell could achieve better student outcomes by focusing on early education, which the governor did not mention. The Democrats also expressed some skepticism over the recent gas line deal, saying they didn't trust the governor to negotiate with North Slope producers because of the controversial oil tax law he signed. Meanwhile, Republicans mostly expressed support for Parnell's State of the State speech, but they did have one critique. At a press availability on Thursday, leaders from the House majority said the governor's education proposal had a lot of good in it, but they were confused as to why an increase to the base student allocation was mixed in with it. A federal appeals court has ruled that the environmental assessment behind a massive oil lease sale in the Chukchi Sea in 2008 was faulty. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, the decision has cast a pall on the future of Arctic oil exploration.
Eric Graffey is an attorney for Earth Justice. He's argued this case through several rounds of appeals on behalf of environmental groups and the Alaska Native communities of Point Hope and the North Slope. In this most recent appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court, Graffey set out to prove that the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or BOEM, miscalculated how much oil would be produced in the Chukchi Sea. At first, BOEM tried to peg potential development to the price of oil, but that was complicated, so the agency ended up choosing 1 billion barrels as the likely output. Graffey says that that number determined
the number of exploration wells that the agency said would result from the lease sale, the number of drilling rigs that would be in the ocean because of the lease sale. It underlay the risk of an oil spill.
Graffey argued that 1 billion barrels of oil was an arbitrary choice, and the appeals court agreed. Now they're sending BOEM back to reassess development in the Chukchi Sea. The price of oil has gone up, so Graffey says BOEM's new study will probably be based on a higher level of activity and production, and Graffey says that could prompt a major reevaluation of Arctic drilling.
The agency has to reconsider the lease sale, whether to hold the lease sale, whether it should open the Chukchi Sea to oil and gas drilling leases, in light of that new analysis that takes a proper look at the potential environmental impact.
The court stopped short of invalidating the 2008 lease sale. Shell Oil recently submitted a new exploration plan for its Chukchi Sea leases, but the company hadn't announced yet whether they intended to go back this year. Now it's not clear if they can. Michael Levine is with Oceana, one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit.
Allowing a company to drill exploration wells on leases that were improvidently awarded is not good governance, and we hope that will not be allowed.
BOEM and the leaseholders named as defendants, Shell, ConocoPhillips, and Statoil, can request a rehearing of the case in appeals court. BOEM declined to comment for this story. In a statement, Shell Oil said only, quote, "We are reviewing the opinion." In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the increasingly tight housing market in Nome and surrounding villages.
What's available often isn't very nice, and it's at an extremely high cost.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions are important members of the state's workforce. From healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants, Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages Alaska employers to consider ways in which Trust beneficiaries and their unique skills can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
About 24 residents of a motel that was seized by the municipality of Anchorage recently may soon be looking for a new place to live. They have not been evicted yet, but the city says that will likely happen because of unsanitary conditions. KSKA's Dacia Eaton has the story.
When Sonia Savick got back to her apartment in room 305 of the Big Timber Motel after having a baby earlier this month, she heard that city officials had paid a visit.
When municipality first came, when I was actually in the hospital giving birth to my 19-day-old, and when they gave the notices for inspection with municipality, I was at the hospital with my daughter's two-week appointment.
The visit worried her. She pays $800 a month for a one-bedroom apartment that she shares with her brother and her three young girls, 4-year-old Ruby, 2-year-old Nevaeh, and newborn Emerald. Savick has lived in the apartment since September. The officials returned this week, posted notices on doors, and did an inspection. She says the apartment was the best she could find.
There's no heat or hot water. I've been still having to pay $800 a month. And, you know, I live here because there isn't much people that's willing to work with limited income, and I'm not able to cover security deposit and whatnot, so I settled for this place.
Down a dank hallway covered in scraps of old carpet, 68-year-old Shirley Bates thought she'd finally found a place she could call home when she moved into room 707 at the back of the motel about 9 months ago. But when inspectors with the city showed up and posted a notice on her door recently, they crushed that hope.
Two people knocked on the door and said the municipality of Anchorage had just taken the building over and that we had 3 or 4 days to move out, pound on the doors, and the two gentlemen. And I said, well, I just paid rent. I said, I don't have any place to move. And one of the guys said, well, that's not our problem.
Bates has two artificial hips and uses a walker. She pays $675 a month for her small room. If the building's condemned, she's worried she won't find another place she can afford.
The rents are like up to $1,100 or $1,200, even at other hotels. I can't afford that. There's no way.
Besides its dingy appearance, building inspectors describe Dickinsonian conditions at the motel near strip clubs across from Merrill Field. Lindsay Witt, a spokesperson for Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan's office, says inspectors looked at the building Tuesday and posted a list of violations.
The lack of heat and hot water in the building, the concern that the fire sprinkler system pipes may freeze, the electric space heaters that they're using to heat the area and the stoves that they're boiling water with are primary heat sources for the units. That's very dangerous. And then we found bed bugs in every single room and mice and vole infestation.
A task force met Wednesday to discuss the property. Witt says officials are reviewing whether to condemn the building. The owner of the Big Timber Motel, Terry Stallman, owes about $34,000 in back taxes, Witt says. Officials say there were no smoke detectors in the building, so the municipality purchased and installed them. No other upgrades are being made at this time. Witt says the municipality is trying to figure out what's next.
We are working with social services and trying to make arrangements, calling around to see their availability and how we move people from this building if it gets much colder.
As of Thursday afternoon, neither Bates nor Savick had heard from anyone with social services about other possible living options. Savick says she's worried.
I'm kind of worried, but, you know, I pray every day. The Lord always have our side, our back, you know. I believe everything will come through.
Officials say they'll make a decision on whether to condemn the building and evict residents in the coming weeks. There are 24 known tenants at the Big Timber Motel, 9 of them children. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Affordable housing is getting harder to find in Nome and surrounding villages. The regional nonprofit corporation Kawerak is drafting a document to present to the state legislature identifying housing as one of the major issues facing the communities in the area. KNOM's Zachariah Hughes reports from Nome.
Pearl Mikulski heads Kawerak's Community Services Division and says the organization has only just begun working to understand what they see as a serious regional concern.
Kawerak full board has identified some priorities to focus on this year, and housing was one of the top priorities, and all of our villages are facing housing shortages, multiple families living in one home and older homes that are in poor condition.
It's an issue that affects villages and hub communities alike. Pat Hahn is a builder in Nome with decades of experience putting up homes and apartments and says that while some of the cost culprits are familiar, others are more nuanced.
It's hard to control the costs here. Freight, of course, is the obvious one. Labor costs tend to be match whatever the materials are. And really the biggest issue is getting land and the sewer lateral, the sewer and water lines, under control. And they can be extremely expensive. Right now the city is completely enclosed in Native Corporation land and in mining claims. So there's no place to go.
That's not unique to Nome. In many of the communities, there's little land left to be spared for new homes. Another issue is mortgage structures that are unrealistic for bush communities where income is augmented by subsistence and capital reserves for monthly installments are limited. The constraints on buildings seep into the rental market here in Nome, which is in the midst of a population expansion. High demand and higher costs for renovating lessen the financial incentives for maintaining pricey rental units. Sue Steinecker, director of outreach for the Nome Emergency Shelter Team, says the scarcity of adequate units keeps professionals from taking jobs in Nome.
We can't get professional positions filled in this town because people don't want to move to Nome. They have heard that the rental market is incredibly tight, that what's available often isn't very nice, and it's at an extremely high cost.
The crunch is even tighter in the communities around Nome. A large part of the problem, says Pearl Mikulski, is that there's no development model currently in place that can meet the needs of tribes in rural parts of the state.
Kawerak's just beginning to explore the politics of how to obtain the funding and what the issues are to assure that houses are built in rural Alaska. And there is a urban bias where we feel that a lot of the funding does go to the urban areas instead of the rural communities. And Kawerak wants to look into making it easier for tribes to get the funding to build homes.
The most comprehensive statewide housing data available is from a 2009 report when state revenues and economic growth made funding opportunities very different from how they look now in an era of shrinking budgets. The pace of new unit construction is further slowed by how reliant regional entities have been on outside funding. Not only are costs associated with building 3 and 4 times higher than in communities on the road system, but the grants, loan programs, and development funds often bring complex logistics that drag out for years. Carrie Bowling is with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation in Anchorage and explains a bit about how they help allocate funds through a mix of other agencies.
The regional housing authorities receive funding from the federal government through NAHASDA, and those funds help them to develop affordable housing in their region of the state. One of the things that is interesting about the HUD funding is it doesn't always cover everything that's needed for a housing project to happen in a particular area, and that's where Alaska Housing comes in.
AHFC's recent development efforts in the region have sought to remove housing as a barrier to education and safety by helping add units for teachers in Stebbins and St. Michael's, as well as a new building for a VPO in Koyuk. But in a region with aging housing stock, harsh weather, and a growing population, there's a lot more that needs to be done. And nobody is yet sure by whom. For KNOM in Nome, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Since 1978, the Older Persons Action Group has been the publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families. They now offer a digital version online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Hope Community Resources has been a part of Alaska for more than 45 years, providing assistance to Alaskans with disabilities. Information on all Hope services and mental health supports is available at hopealaska.org. This message sponsored by Hope Community Resources.
A final public hearing on proposed Department of Environmental Conservation fine particulate pollution regulations drew a large turnout earlier this week in Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the regulations aimed at bringing wintertime air in Fairbanks in line with federal standards continue to be controversial.
Dozens testified on the seven proposed regulations, which include particulate level and smoke opacity standards and the ability to call localized wood-burning bans. The regulations were criticized by locals like Paul Reichart for lacking specifics about how they'd be carried out and enforced.
Most of the sticks in the ADEC regulations are more like twigs than sticks. In particular, I find the pervasive use of the word may to be problematic. We certainly do not want or need a straitjacket, a plan that specifies automatic draconian actions mandated under certain conditions. But we're also not served well by a plan filled with wishy-washy or vaguely defined responses to air quality episodes.
Wood smoke has been identified as the primary contributor of PM2.5 particulates in the Fairbanks area, but numerous people pointed to the proposed regulation's narrow focus on wood stove emissions. Kelly Pelham, an aide to Representative Tammy Wilson and a North Pole resident, pushed for other emission sources to be addressed.
I think a lot of us can agree that there is a problem with air quality, but I don't think that we can all agree that it's just from wood. We've heard mention of coal, wood. Think about emissions from cars, buildings, everywhere you go, something is affecting the air quality, but this seems to be more about wood.
Another testifier, Fairbanks resident Teresa DeLima, specifically targeted emissions from large sources like oil refineries and coal-fired power plants. DeLima said she and a number of other local residents recently petitioned the Environmental Protection Agency to require tougher state enforcement of emissions from the downtown Fairbanks Aurora Energy Plant.
The black particulate which rains down out of the sky onto my family's property and many of my neighbors' properties should give ADEC a clue that there is something wrong. Gravely wrong.
DeLima also pointed to chemical gas emissions that transform into particulates in the atmosphere, another issue not addressed by the proposed state regulations. A group of students from local high schools also testified. Youth are at higher risk from breathing fine particulates, and West Valley High School senior Tristan Glova said health impacts should outweigh economic concerns.
We believe that just as much as we have a right to warm homes, we also have a right to clean air. We need to find a balance between these rights, but out of concern for our health and the health of youth in this town as a whole, we believe that our right to a healthy environment takes precedence over other people's right to engage in activities that pollute our air.
Yesterday's hearing in Fairbanks was the final meeting in a months-long review process that began in September with the release of the proposed regulations. The next step is for the DEC to incorporate the feedback into regulations in an EPA-required state implementation plan. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is asking for public comment on guidelines updating the effects of human-made sounds on marine mammals. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Marine mammals rely on their sense of sound for survival.
They use it for feeding and locating mates and just generally understanding what's going on in the world around them.
NOAA fisheries biologist Amy Scholick-Schlomer is an acoustic specialist. She says the guidelines update the levels at which human-made sounds affect marine mammals temporarily and permanently. NOAA calls these threshold shifts. A marine mammal experiencing a temporary threshold shift is like going to a rock concert.
Your hearing's temporarily affected, but it fully recovers. While permanent threshold shift would be something that your hearing is affected, but it doesn't fully recover. You have some permanent loss. It doesn't mean you're deaf, and it doesn't mean that it affects your entire hearing range. It just means that you can't hear quite as well as you could before.
Brad Smith is a marine mammal biologist with NOAA in Anchorage. He says acoustic impacts on marine mammals are pertinent to Alaska, especially to the oil and gas industry.
We have seismic geophysical surveys, which introduce very, very loud sounds into the water in areas where we have endangered and threatened species and marine mammals in general, notably the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, and more recently here in Cook Inlet.
The construction industry also needs to be aware of the sounds it creates.
The Port of Anchorage, certainly the Kavada crossing, the bridge if it's built, all those construction activities that involve pile driving or placing sheet pile, possibly others such as dredging, anything that creates in-water noise in areas where marine mammals exist may potentially generate enough noise to cause that animal to be harassed.
Smith says activities involving operating a vessel, like running a loud outboard motor, don't reach the same levels of in-water noise. Scholik Schlomer says the new guidelines address the fact that different marine mammals hear noise differently. For example, humpback whales are considered low-frequency cetaceans. Many human-made sounds heard underwater that come from construction activities or seismic surveys are also low-frequency.
Humpback whales hear and use low-frequency sounds, so they would be more impacted by something like seismic opposed to killer whales who actually hear better at higher frequencies where there isn't as much anthropogenic sounds.
How sounds affect marine mammals is still an emerging science, and Scholik Schlomer says there are gaps in research.
All the large whale species, we actually have no direct information on how they hear because it's difficult to do those types of studies. So we have to use the best available information we have and extrapolate from data from bottlenose dolphins or even sometimes terrestrial species like mice and rats where we don't have any other data.
The original public comment period was to end January 27th. Due to requests from members of Alaska's congressional delegation, the oil industry, and various conservation organizations, NOAA has extended the comment period through March 13th. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lauren Rosenthal in on Alaska, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Zachariah Hughes in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez also reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.